Wow, what an incredible film. Before we get into the nitty-gritty, I just want to ask all of our panelists, and before you speak, just please identify yourselves. If you could provide some takeaways, what you thought of this film, about the issue at hand. Why don't you start here?
My name is Carla Hunter. I'm an assistant professor in the Department of Psychology. So many takeaways that... And so many intersections with the work I do and the things that interest me about thinking about identity and how identity and affects well-being. And what we know from the research that says that when people are not allowed to define themselves, not allowed to narrate who they are, it really undermines their well-being and their mental health. So that's one takeaway. The other is this idea that I also champion in my work with, which is that the Black community is not a monolithic group. And I think the film highlighted that very well. And we don't have enough conversations about that, and I actually would have loved to have seen more of that in the film. And I think I will stop there because I think I could talk forever about the takeaways.
Hi, I'm Adeline Verona. I'm also in the psychology department. I've been there 10 years. And I'm mostly an audience member myself here. My expertise is not professional in this area. It's a bit more personal. But I think the one takeaway, what I liked about the film was the juxtaposition of the role of the church in one civil rights campaign versus another, and how some folks are able to reconcile that within the Black community, and some folks had some trouble reconciling that. So I thought that was really well done in the movie.
My name is Keith Harris, and I'm on the pastoral staff at McKinley Presbyterian Church in Champaign. I also had lots of takeaways. I found that, a couple things that I would lift up is... The new black, that terminology was a little offensive to me because that seemed to, as you already mentioned, imply that what it means to be black is one thing and not many. I think the Bible is always interpreted. I think when people say they're not interpreting the Bible, I find that hard to understand or believe. I think we all interpret it. And I think... especially as a Christian pastor, I think as I read scripture, Jesus was radically inclusive to the point of death, people that he welcomed, people that he hung out with. And so the people that Jesus seemed to have the hardest time with were the people that were religious leaders that thought that they had the monopoly on God's truth. And so there were so many takeaways, but those are two that I would mention right away.
My name is Andrea Rundell, and I'm a nonprofit professional here in the community. I work in human services, and I make it my business to be concerned about social justice issues in the many things that I do. Largely, I work in hunger relief efforts right now. I'm also a lesbian, and I'm absolutely blessed to have an African-American son. And so this was a very, very important movie for me to see to think about, really, one that the African-American community isn't as monolithic as it is frequently perceived or frequently portrayed as being. But also for me, on a personal level, a lot of the things that I saw in there were the struggles that I and friends of mine have had in trying to get out there and have these conversations with so many people, personal conversations and political conversations. And I really liked seeing that it was understood to be very complex and that there are intersections in everyone's lives. And that it's a false duality when you say, are you black or are you gay? Are you white or are you gay? Are you this or are you that? that so many, everybody has all of these intersections, and that trying to figure out what to do with them and how to work them, when sometimes, you know, people call them into opposition is a really important piece of figuring out who you are and, you know, how you can live in the world.
You know, that's an excellent segue to my next question. Watching this film, June 1st, the same-sex marriage law took effect statewide. I'm wondering, you know, for all of you, do you remember what was going through your mind when it was first signed into law? And piggybacking on that, how it maybe adds to the narrative of being a civil rights issue, if you believe it is. If you want to jump into that.
I recall thinking that it was about time, and feeling that, so part of what's personal for me in this is that I also identified when I was younger as a Catholic person and left the church because I felt that the views of the church were not in alignment with my own in terms of its position on lesbian, gays, as well as looking for a venue last year when I got married and finding a venue that I thought was going to be perfect, and it turns out they were against civil unions and things like that, and actually went after people who tried to approach them about holding civil unions. So I think I thought, finally, it's about time. They will not be able to get away with this, for example. I felt that I did what I could as an advocate in terms of not giving them my business, but I finally felt like I had the law behind me to say, this is not right. This is not something that should continue. Now, in terms of it being a civil rights issue, I would say absolutely. I agree with many of the sentiments in the film around being unable to live in a country, in a society where discrimination against anyone is tolerated. And so that's the shortest.
Have you experienced discrimination, I mean, on both fronts? I mean, just going, you know, can you elaborate a little bit more on that?
On my personal experiences of discrimination?
Yeah.
Definitely as a woman, as a black woman, definitely. Not as a... when I said I was getting married, I married a man.
Oh.
Sorry about that. Surprise, sorry. Sorry about that. But I think I mentioned it to say that this is such an important part of who I am and how I identify that this was not separate from me even though I was marrying a man. I married a man.
I would echo that I also thought that A, it was about time, and B, what McKinley had been doing for a long time would no longer cause us to get unordained, celebrating love in all of its facets. And I do think it is a civil rights issue as well. I think racism is alive and well. And there are other things that are connected to and with that, but I do believe that the civil rights is something that is a universal umbrella. The other thing that I would say is, as a pastor, I appreciate films like this, and so don't disparage it, but I've been on the not happy end of families that don't accept or reject or ostracize or have to really struggle with what kind of ceremony or marriage they want because they don't want it to be, quote, heterosexual, but what does it mean to have a gay marriage, and what's that look like, and what do you keep, what do you throw away? And so this documentary was very hopeful. As a pastor, I've been on the side where it hasn't ended that happy, or people aren't smiling and hugging and saying I love you unconditionally.
I think when I heard it had finally, you know, passed in Illinois and, you know, now is for real in Illinois, I did have a high time sort of feeling to it, but I also had this weird, like, I must be in a parallel dimension now feeling of I never really thought that was going to happen. My, you know, own experiences growing up gay and coming out in the 80s really instilled in me a feeling of this is just never going to get done. This is not going to happen. So I'm still kind of like stunned, but I'm very, very happy. And in a lot of ways, you know, not you know, on a personal level of now I'm going to get married because don't really plan to get married right away. But in the sense that it is so incredibly symbolic, it feels like a tide has turned for gay people in a way that we can say, you know, it's not just, oh, I can get married now, but that I can, you know, I can actually be gay and I can sit here and talk to people. And I'm being recorded saying these things. I'm not sitting here going, am I going to lose my job now? Right? I'm feeling like, no, you know what? I think I can pretty much be okay on these things. And it's just a very, very strange feeling. It's a good feeling, but it's nothing I didn't expect to feel.
It's kind of like the
it is.
Yeah.
Not that we haven't got other things to do. We got plenty of things to do on all fronts, and on the racism front, on the, you know, homophobia front. There's plenty of work out there in the world yet.
Well, you know, in the film, we heard Pastor K.Z. Smith is one of the church leaders who spoke on camera in the film, and he said that LGBT people are trying to be the new minority and put blacks on the back of the bus again. What do you think he means by that?
I just had this conversation with Edelyn. That's one of those parts in the film where I think I wanted more. I wanted to hear more from church leaders around how they think about that. I mean, I have my own thoughts. I'm not sure if it's correct. And quite honestly, it's not something I agree with or understand in some ways where they're coming from. I can only think of it as a resource issue and threat issue in a kind of an intellectual way is what it sounds like to me, that the more minorities have a space, the less there will be for us. I mean, and that says something very sad about how we think about power and resources in this country. But beyond that, I'm not sure what to make of that statement.
I also would say that it seems to speak to a very small God that has scarce resources. So if certain resources are used in justice in one area, then that means it's taken from another. And I believe in a God of abundant love and abundant justice, and so there's plenty of justice to go around for all of God's children.
Reverend Harris, I want to ask you, what impact do you believe the acceptance of LGBT members has on the black church, its different members and leaders?
Ask that question again.
Yeah, I guess, what impact do you believe the acceptance of LGBT members in the black church, what impact do you believe that has on it's the different members in the black church and the leaders there?
I think as it has been in the beginning and always, it's about relationship and having relationships. And I think that it's significant for not only LGBT folks to speak out, but also for people that are straight allies, because I think it's often easy to dismiss and say, well, they're standing up for it because that affects them directly and that's their personal issue. And I think God calls it all to be our personal issue, how we are community together.
Okay. Well, you know, I want to just transition and see if there are any questions from the audience. Anything that really resonated with you from this film?
So what were your favorite parts of the film, for example?
Well, I wonder if, I don't know how one could make a judgment on this, but I wonder if...
Thank you. I'm wondering if you have a sense... I mean, a couple of questions are running through my mind, and one is whether, this tying this in with the civil rights issue and the fact that during the last 5 or 6 years, we've had a black president, very articulate one. That's one question I'm asking, whether that might have been a factor in assisting, a process that's taking place anyway, but whether it may be a catalyst. And I've had a senior moment. If I think of the second question, I'll come back. Well, I'm wondering if you have a sense that there's a transition taking place within the black churches. Because I heard some very articulate voices in front of those churches, and I'm wondering if what your sense is as to the nature of the dynamics that are taking place.
I cannot speak to your second question. I am not, as I indicated before, I'm not part of an organized religion and actually identify as spiritual. And so I don't feel like I have a pulse for what's taking place in the black community in terms of the churches.
I serve a predominantly Euro-American but diverse church, and so I don't know that there's any one. I think it depends on church, denomination, region. What I do think is I have the privilege of working with young adults, and I was talking about with one of them that I was going to be officiating a same-sex wedding, and this young person said to me, "Do you know what they're going to call same-sex marriages 20 years from now?" And I said, "No, what?" And he said, "Marriages." And so what I think is that as people continue to have relationships with a diverse group of people, whether it be at work, college, whatever, and begin to understand the other is a human being just like they are, and that my hope is that as the woman hopefully said toward the end, that church by church, state by state, that things, the arc of God's justice seems to still be toward an inclusive one.
Actually, after first viewing the film, I actually thought that that would be a great research question to ask, is to look at how someone's religious identification really impacts how it intersects with their racial identity, to look at how they think about these more complex issues. Because it is very, to me, seems connected to how literal they read the Bible. And I think some of that was mentioned in the film.
I have the microphone, I guess. I've just been forming some still inchoate thoughts, but first of all, even though I'm a lesbian and I've been in a 17-year relationship that is interracial, I'm personally a conscientious objector to the institution of marriage as a state. Just having the state sanctify or decide what's a family, period. And I think, although the film opened with some statements that this is a revolutionary thing that's happening, I think we see evidence, actually, that this whole thing is a very conservative argument, because it cycled everybody back into the question of, we're competing to see who gets into the club, instead of saying, we don't want there to be a club. And actually that comment by the one person that, then we'll be sitting at the back of the bus again, was just evidence of how, it's almost sinister, I think, the way the white church leaders with all their money were able to calculate that response. I think what I want to say is that people who are heavily under the influence of religious dogma, regardless of their race, I think we see evidence of this every day, are subject to political manipulation along the same crap that we've been fighting for so long. And in that sense, it's such a larger problem or question than it is a question of race. When you add to that some of those very poignant statements that were made about what is precious in black church, in black communities, specifically that this is an autonomous organization where people are not serving whites. I mean, that's a huge mouthful. So I think you know, if you add that to the influence of religion in this country and you look at it under racism, that is maybe a particular black picture of what's going on with, you know, sexual conservatism in communities. But I so want the conversation to expand. I want a country where the borders are free. You don't have to be married to somebody to bring them over from wherever. I want a country where you don't have to get in a state-sanctioned relationship because that's the only way you can get health care. Well, that's starting to maybe change a little bit. I mean, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. All the reasons that people need the state to say, this is your family. Those are problems that we all ought to be able to solve just because we live here. But I'm especially infuriated when I hear the sum of money that these white churches spent to manipulate the kind of just sort of general stupidity that Americans of every appearance and background are susceptible to unless we are really educated. We're subject to that kind of manipulation. And if I just think what that money could have done in those communities, and it just pisses me off that, you know, the sex I like to have got used as a football to waste that kind of money like that. I said 10 things and I didn't wrap them up too nicely, but that's what I've been thinking about.
Hi. As experts and educators in psychology, what were your opinions on the statement that as an oppressed people, they take, well, as I interpret it as, they take traits of the oppressor, and they have to spread that onto another person? What were your ideas of that statement, that they now have to push that onto another person, and also the hypocrisy of this is a minority trying to overrule the majority and all that? What are your opinions?
I mean, to the first point, I would say that that's absolutely correct, that there is a history of modeling and doing to others what was done to you in the simplest form. So that is something that is found in psychology. And your second point again was, could you say it again?
There was, briefly after that, there was this point where they didn't show the person who was preaching at the time, but he was saying how there was like a minority is trying to rise up against the majority, and it was sounding very, very similar to anti-civil rights propaganda. And what are your opinions on that?
You said experts and then the psychology people, and I can't claim to be an expert or a psychology people, but I wanted to speak to some of what I'm hearing in a couple of different places, and that I also noticed in the film is the divisiveness between groups that is indeed perpetuated by people who want a particular outcome, and they aren't necessarily going to be friends with either of those groups. They're not really more than sort of, you know, momentary allies in so many ways, but who are perfectly willing to use an issue to drive a wedge between people who I think should be natural allies. And I've seen this over and over and again in social justice issues, where somebody has an issue that they want to say, this is the important thing right now. And unfortunately, they do it to the exclusion of all the other things that are important right now. And they alienate other people while they're trying to express what they're up to. One thing that certainly didn't really come up in this, I think it got alluded to, was frankly the racism in the sort of mainstream white gay culture that exists and that tends to perpetuate all of these same things. And that just, it keeps baffling me. It's one of these things that I'm like, really? Why are we doing this again? And I think that also speaks a little bit to the idea that there's a lack of resources, whatever those resources might be. And it seems to be a weird, like, no, it's a lack of legitimacy. You can't be legitimate. I have to be legitimate. And we have to be in opposition to one another. And I've seen that so many times, like I said, among different groups of people who I think have social justice alliances, at least, if not friendships there. And as you said, groups that aren't going to be friends of either using that as a wedge. And I find that very troubling about many social justice movements, that they can't figure out how to be inclusive, or at least not to say, I'm more important than you. And instead to understand that this is, you know, our identities are very intersectional and they need to be considered that way. There's not monolithic anything. There's not a monolithic gay person. And there's not a monolithic black person. And there's not, you know, we have a lot to talk about together. Let's not drive those wedges ourselves. And certainly let's be on the lookout when somebody's trying to actually drive those wedges for us.
So. Well, what do you think would... What do you think it would take to develop a more unified LGBT rights movement that, I guess, is more inclusive of all races?
My first rather facetious thought is not more letters. LGBTQ, lots and lots and lots of letters. And I recognize, I think it's important to recognize other people and all the various things. I think that's really important. And so I don't want to disparage, well, we're just going to have to keep trans people out of this or something like that. But I think renaming what you're doing is not changing what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
In so many ways. And I think that you need to stop and listen and talk to one another. And I think, you know, for example, addressing racism in the, you know, the white gay communities, we're just going to have to start talking about it and say, you know what, we aren't doing a good job of being inclusive. We go around and we say, we've got to include everybody, and here's another letter or whatever, and all of that thing, but we hang on to our own privilege as white people in a lot of ways. And I think that... I saw a quote recently that said, you know, racism is not black people's problem, and it's not. Racism is white people's problem. And we have to step up and say, okay, then we got to talk about it. We have to deal with it. And not wait for someone who actually bothers to turn around and say, oh, by the way, you need to think about that one. And if they say that, we need to take them seriously. But I think we really need to think bigger than what we're thinking now.
You have a question over there. Yeah, yeah. And you attend Uni High, is that correct?
Yeah, I attend Uni High.
Okay, cool. Actually, before you address your comment, would you mind telling us a little bit about the project you're working on?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. So I'm a rising senior at Uni High, and part of something that we do in our social studies curriculum is we have this oral history project. And I believe, actually, an audience member, we interviewed several people from the audience. This year, our project is called The Right to Marry, and we explore non-traditional marriages, such as same-sex marriages and interracial marriages. So I was, you know, really interested in this because it seemed like a really, you know, unique intersection of those two topics that I've, you know, spent researching this past year, and I'm planning on continuing to research this coming year as I, you know, go into my senior year. So kind of my comment, one thing that really interested me in the film was seeing how people reconciled or didn't reconcile their religion with their, you know, sexuality or what they believed was, you know, a right that people should have. And I think as a teenager, I see a lot of my peers, you know, just merely casting off religion as like this, you know, untouchable thing, which I don't think that's really important. I spend a lot of time personally. I was raised in a very, you know, conservative Christian household, and I've spent a lot of time not just grappling with same-sex gay rights, but also with like things like women's rights and other things that are that I, you know, was raised certain ways to believe. And I think I was just interested to see in the film some people, you know, completely cast out of religion, and then some people like the pastors. Managed to tie it in a way that made it really meaningful and not like it was just beating around the bushes or, you know, whatever. And I was just wondering about your reactions to this.
One of the clearest things I think that I could safely say is that the church is really stunk at showing God's love. I believe we can thank our Puritan brothers and sisters, mostly brothers, for instilling a fear-based, get it right or you go to hell kind of mentality. And with that fear-based, then it's focused on punishment, not on relationship or reaching out or understanding love any differently than the Pharisees and Sadducees that we criticize a lot in Scripture. So I think the church has really stunk at its ability, both capital C and small c's, in showing God's love to others. I think that, I guess the good news for me is that the church is mostly founded on the fact that we as human beings tend to be fallible and broken, and it's by God's love and grace that we are redeemed. So I'm not surprised by human behavior, including my own. And it's really important, I think, as we are angry and hurt by others' actions, not to do the same thing to them that has happened to the people we're wanting to stand up for or want to include in God's family. And I think unless the capital C church changes the way that it is, it will probably die and then reemerge in a different way, because deciding who's in and who's out and who God loves and who God doesn't love is no longer working.
What I really enjoyed in the films was when they sort of zoomed into individual families or individual more intimate conversations that were not political or that were tinged by politics, but they were between people who presumably loved each other. And
was there one in particular that you're thinking of?
Well, there's two. One were some of the activists who were sort of sitting having dinner, and the second one was the African American family of the CEO of that organization that was sort of leading the movement, and the diversity of views even amongst people who share a common background, share probably, you know, some similar a similar religious background. And I thought that was really a nice, it brought it to a more personal level, how people who have these similar backgrounds sort of interpret their upbringing, which includes religion, includes spirituality, but it also includes these other things. And you know, and I see that in my own family. I come from a very conservative Hispanic family that also has very, my family especially, but in the communities I was raised in, they very anti-gay views, and going to visit, and I have a stepdaughter who's gay, and I haven't told my family about it. I mean, partly because it's hers to tell, it's not mine to tell, but it's also, I don't want her being judged. And I don't know, and eventually they'll probably find out, because we're very supportive of her, and she'll have a partner. But it's not something that, I don't have the guts to tell them, and I think monolithically they will be against it and will judge her.
Well, I really love that scene when the field organizer was basically meeting with her adoptive mother and trying to gain acceptance. That was just a very, very touching moment. You can tell there was that fear and frustration of, well, what if she doesn't accept me? And it wasn't about being tolerant, it was about accepting.
I would have to say I echo Edlyn's point as well, feeling as though at times I've taken the easy way out in not remaining in the church in some way and trying to influence views, and just avoiding those kinds of conversations. So it reminds me of our earlier conversation about what does it take to have a unified social justice movement. It would take all of us, I think, looking at our own privilege, because that's my privilege in those situations and choosing to avoid, choosing not to avoid. So I think I definitely took the easy way out.
Well, I think the scene where the young woman, the organizer, is talking to her foster mother, mm-hmm. That was kind of harrowing for me. I don't know about anybody else. But I think one of the things that illustrates is that is difficult. That's a really tough conversation. And so while I agree with you, I think we all have to come up to that. I don't think we should be beating ourselves up about not stepping up to it every time. I frankly don't have the energy to step up to it every time I have to, you know, face something that's going on around me. And I pick and choose my battles. I pick and choose my battles with my own family. It takes a lot of courage. It takes a lot of emotional strength. And I think it takes a lot of support. So I think the kind of support that, you know, Keith is talking about is really, really important for anybody who's trying to, I kind of want to say come out, but I don't want to say come out because it's everything, right? It's every piece of what we're talking about. In order to be able to say, okay, I've got to have this conversation with my mom, or no, I can't let that one pass by. It takes being able to say, you know, I also know there's someone behind me there somewhere. That's tough.
The scene, the barbecue scene, for me, I sort of had these flashbacks where we saw the women on one side, the men on one side talking. I sort of had this flashback of just around the dinner table with my own family, conversation of same-sex marriage coming up and differences in opinion. Did anybody else have that reaction, just, you know, memories or a reaction to that scene in particular? Yeah, you. Yeah, yeah.
You know, homosociality, you know, they don't want to sort of look at that piece underneath it, and then really prefer the company of one another all the time. But I have an actual question that I would like to ask each of the panels, if that's okay now.
Oh, of course,
maybe
please.
I don't even need this, but there were some moments in the film that sort of bring to mind this piece of conventional wisdom that I've heard many times, which is, oh, there's so much homophobia in the black community, or, oh, there's so much homophobia in the Latino community. And I just would like to ask each of the panelists whether you think, and I'm pleased to have the opportunity to ask a European-American, two African-Americans, and a Latina, whether this is, there's any validity to this in your perception, or whether that's just racist hoo-ha. That's what I would like to ask from each of you.
So your question is, does homophobia...
Do you really think the subtext is so much more than in white communities. I didn't complete that part of my question. I'm suspicious of that when I hear it, and I don't think it's true, but I would like to know from each of you what your experience is and how you respond when you hear that.
I would say yes. There is tons of homophobia in the black community.
More than in white communities.
I don't know.
I
don't know if it's more than... I know there seems to be, at the surface, less tolerance. I'm not sure how to... Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how to compare that. I know in my own family, there seems to be less tolerance than what I've observed maybe with my other friends.
So I'm Cuban, so I can only speak to that. Although I was raised in Miami, so I had a lot of friends from different Hispanic groups, and I tend to use Hispanic just because I'm from Florida and that's what they use there. But I think it gets confounded in my life because my family comes from a certain socioeconomic status. So the Hispanics I know tend to be more working class, less education, whereas my white friends tend to be more educated, and I think that might be a confound. I agree with Carla, though, that I sense, even amongst groups that are sort of more matched on socioeconomic status, that the Hispanic community tends to be more vocal in their homophobia than the whites maybe. They feel more comfortable sort of saying it out loud. That's just my sense.
I think it's equal. I think that racism makes it sound like people of color are more homophobic than others. I think it's just been within a couple generations where rape and sexual abuse of people of color, African Americans in specific, is still a part of family identity. And so I think that in general, again, you can't speak for everyone, that people of color may find it harder to have conversations about sexuality because there's some givens about sexuality that your Americans have that people of color do not have. But I see it. I think when a person of color says something homophobic, everyone labels or identifies that. I think when a Euro-American does that, it's not necessarily lifted out, but I think it's equal.
I'm glad I'm the last person answering this question. Because I can't speak to any of the communities of color, really. I can only speak to the sort of experience that I have, which is your experience, which is I get told that there's going to be more homophobia in one or another community. And being a white lesbian raising a black son, I've had lots of warnings given to me by black people, largely, saying, play that down so he's not getting into a lot of trouble at school. That kind of thing. Keep it quiet. You don't want people to know because he's going to get grief. And it's been very hard to navigate that because by no means do I want any of my family members to feel ashamed of what our family is and who we are. I've been lucky to find black friends who are happy to have us around. Not everybody is, but I've been lucky to find people who support us in different ways. And a couple of them who've called each other out on homophobia when that's come up too. So there's that, but I think there's also in reactions to my family, there's also a question of race there. You know, what's this white woman doing with a black kid? And there are very legitimate questions to go with that about, you know, am I just going to, like, raise him to be completely oblivious to all the kinds of horrible things that could happen to him, let him loose in the world, and watch him go bam? Or, you know, how am I going to make sure that he understands that he's, you know, got a community that isn't just me, and in fact that I'm not actually a part of, that he's got an African-American community that is part of his identity. How do I make sure he sees that? How do I make sure he gets to that? So there are very legitimate questions to ask me as a white mom, as a lesbian mom, but they all end up getting filtered through this whole thing of who's more homophobic or who's more racist in so many ways that I don't know how to parse that out.
So I had a quick question. I don't know if it's quick or not, but has to do with, and maybe a comment as well as a question, relationships, and that one way of kind of crossing barriers is when family members find out that this is a family member who knows you and loves you, and I know it doesn't always work out, but I guess both for gender issues and racial issues, I think a lot of the reason that we have so much difficulty is because we're ignorant, and when someone is a family member and already knows about you, or I think about interracial marriage as another way that people in a sense are kind of forced to face this and get to know somebody and find out more about their humanity and them as a person. So I'm wondering, have experiences that you've had, have more of them gone positive as opposed to negative when this has happened. I guess I also think about the two examples in the movie, the one where the young lady is telling her foster mother about this, and the foster mother, of course, is saying yes from the start, but I don't know how she's really processing that. But I do think over time, she's likely to think better about issues of lesbian or gay as a result of this young woman who she loves and cares for. So I guess I'm wondering about your experiences this way. And what I think it's potentially one of the solutions, though may take many, many years. It's one of the best solutions is intermarriage, and when family members find out other family members are gay, I really believe this is something that can have an impact. Do you?
I'm always surprised, you know, I'm always surprised how people can compartmentalize. And again, not to speak bad about my family, but they've got a lot of prejudices and that I'm sure I carry inside of me all the time, and I because I'm conscious of them, I struggle with them, whereas they're okay with them, so they don't have to struggle. But you know, I was born in Cuba, but I visited, I came young over here, and I visited after I was grown and met you know, and sort of got to know my family of origin there more, and you saw this sort of racism that pervaded their family. But then my grandfather still had, his best friend was black, but he would still say some of the most racist things in the world, and I just couldn't reconcile that. I never went back. You know, sort of that experience you had about, I just couldn't accept it, even though he was my grandfather. So I just feel like, at least in my family, there's definitely this compartmentalization. And I'd like to think that, you know, it meant that he was different in general from having this friend, but I don't think so. I don't think his views really changed. He just said, well, this guy's okay. I don't know.
Like tokenism.
Yeah. No, sorry.
I think as a pastor, and I kind of already said it, I'm not sure what the percentage is, but I get to see the yucky, bloody, non-reconciled, not coming to the wedding, not talking to you anymore. You are written out of the will, and that's been over years. I've seen the wounds of, you know, whether it be, you know, gay union or interracial or whatever, just not an acceptance ever. Just that the person really has to choose between this person they love and or their family. So I'd like to be able to say that it's getting better, but I think the reality is that slowly but surely, but I think a lot of people are going to, there's still a lot to be done.
Well, you know, I want to just I think this might be my final question, and we'll leave it open to the audience after this. But I guess what other issues and rights beyond same-sex marriage are important for achieving equality?
Say that again.
Yeah. You know, what other what other rights beyond same-sex marriage are important, in your opinion, for achieving equality?
Can we get rid of this rape culture thing? Because I think that's a pretty important one. The fact that, you know, women and less frequently, but certainly men are sexually abused, and that it's passed off as being okay or somehow not a problem, I think that's a really big concern, and it should be a big concern for everybody. And I think that's one of the things that I think we need to come to terms with is... a sort of, don't know if I want to put it like this, but a respect for people and their integrity, their bodily integrity, their personhood, that can't be cast aside quite so lightly as saying things like, well, you know, boys would be boys. That's got to become unacceptable.
Well, yeah, turn on the radio, turn on the TV, and you're constantly bombarded by those messages. We hear it all the time. Anybody else like to add what they think, what more should be done to achieve equality? And I'm going to let you define equality how you see it.
I think they're all interrelated, but my big four are sexism, ageism, racism, and classism. Mm-hmm. I think they're all interwoven, so I'm not sure you can really separate out marriage equality from that, but I think if we were to address, quote, those big four, it would go a long ways.
Economic inequality in particular, I think, is, and it's a reflection of something else that I think we need to work on that I think has been touched on already, is the polarization. I think an increasing polarization. I read an article, I think, recently in The Atlantic that talked about, like, they had some data to show actually, you know, people have talked about, well, polarization, political polarization has been around forever, but there's actually some data to show that it's actually getting wider. Of course, they blame one party more than the other, but I'm not going to say which one. So I think polarization is a big thing, and I think it's also driven by this economic inequality that makes the side sort of like, I want to have the money, you know, and if you're on this side, you're more likely to become rich. Or so I think those things are kind of interwoven.
In addition to what everyone else has said, I would add domestic violence and homelessness are the two that I think about, because I think about how children are affected. And when I think about marriage equality and so much about family, it's often about safeguarding children and taking care of children and thinking about a future generation. So I would say I would add those to the long list, unfortunately.
One other thing I would add that sort of relates to a question. One of the things that I celebrate about our democratic process when it's at its best is that a small minority can try to influence the majority and we start having conversations. So I don't see having conversations about things, whether we end up agreeing or not agreeing, as a bad thing. I think conversations build relationships that build connection, that even if you end up not agreeing, you still can be community.
Well, that was evidenced during that discussion when the women were in the dining room and it was dinner time, and at the end it was like, can I still get a hug?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So I think that speaks to your point almost exactly.
Any other questions from our audience or comments? Well, as it was mentioned over there, Uni High is putting together a larger documentary looking at the history of the right to marry for same-sex couples and interracial couples, and they're basically collecting oral histories from people in this community. And they're going to be in the process of putting that together, and you'll eventually be able to hear that on WILL. It's a fantastic project. I'm really excited for them. So I really appreciate all of you coming here tonight and seeing this film, and I want to thank our panelists. This has been a really just eye-opening conversation.
Thank you.